Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 60. We're almost done with the chapter. Chapter 2 from Canto 7. Atak shochatama yuyam param chatmanam evava ka atma ka paro vatra Sviya parakya evava svapara binivesena vinagyanena dehinam. One more time. Atakṣo chatamāyoyam param chatmanam evava ka atma ka paro vatra sviya parakya evava svaparabhinivesena vina jnanena dehinam. Ataha. Therefore, shochata, lament for, ma, do not, yo yam, all of you, param, another, cha, and, atmanam, yourself, eva, certainly, va, or, kaha, who, atma, self, kaha, who, paraha, other, va, or, atra, in this material world, sviyaha, one's own, parakyaha, for others, eva, indeed, va, or, sva para abhinivesena, consisting of absorption in the bodily concept of oneself and others, vina, besides, agyanena, the lack of knowledge, dehinam, of all the embodied living entities. Translation, therefore, none of you should be aggrieved for the loss of the body, whether your own or those of others. Only in ignorance does one make bodily distinctions, thinking, who am I? Who are the others? What is mine? What is for others? Purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda. In this material world, the conception of self-preservation is the first law of nature. According to this conception, one should be interested in his personal safety and should then consider society, friendship, love, nationality, community, and so on, which have all developed because of the bodily conception of life and a lack of knowledge of the spirit soul. This is called Ajnana. As long as human society is in the darkness of ignorance, men will continue to make huge arrangements in the bodily conception of life that's described by Prahlad Maharaj as Bharam. We're going to refer to that verse. In the materialistic conception, modern civilization makes enormous arrangement for huge roads, houses, mills, and factories, and this is man's conception of advancement, of civilization. People do not know, however, that at any time, they themselves may be kicked out of the scene and forced to accept bodies that have nothing to do with these enormous houses, palaces, roads, and automobiles. Therefore, when Arjuna was thinking in terms of his bodily relationships with his kinsmen, Krishna immediately chastised him, saying, Kutastva kashmalam idam vishame samupashtatam anaryam jushtam. Translation, this bodily conception of life is befitting the Anaryas, the non-Aryans, who are not advanced in knowledge. An Aryan civilization is a civilization advanced in spiritual knowledge, not merely by stamping oneself an Aryan does one become an Aryan. To keep oneself in the deepest darkness concerning spiritual knowledge and at the same time claiming to be an Aryan is a non-Aryan position. In this connection, Srila Madhvacharya quotes as follows from Brahmavivarta Purana. Then the first part is his comment. Ka atma ka para iti dehadi apekshaya. Then nahi dehadbir atmasyan nacha shatrur udirataha ata daihika vridhau va kshaye va kim parojanam. And it goes on. Yastu dehagato jivaha sahi nasham na gachati tatak shatru vridhau cha sva nashe shochana kutaha. One more. Dehadi vyatira vyatirikak tau tu jiveshau prati janata ata atma vrvidhishtu vasudeve rati stira shatru nashastata jnana nasho nanya katanchana. And Prabhupada doesn't even translate it. Huh? Well, the purport is that as long as we are in this human form of body, our duty is to understand the soul within the body. The body is not the self. We are different from the body, and therefore there is no question of friends, enemies, or responsibilities. We can be, you know, irresponsible. It's okay. Prabhupada says. Madhvacharya says you can be irresponsible. Haibo. In terms of the bodily concept of life, one should not be very anxious about the body's changing from childhood to boyhood to old age, and then the apparent annihilation. Rather, one should be very seriously concerned about the soul within the body and how to release the soul from the material clutches. The living entity within the body is never annihilated. Therefore, one should surely know that whether one has many friends or many enemies, his friends cannot help him and his enemies cannot do him any harm. One should know that he is a spirit soul, aham brahmasmi, and that the constitutional position of the soul is unaffected by the changes of the body. In all circumstances, everyone as a spirit soul must be a devotee of Lord Vishnu and should not be concerned with bodily relationships, whether with friends or with enemies. One should know that neither we ourselves nor our enemies in the bodily concept of life are ever killed. And one more verse for tomorrow morning. Text 59 is also for this morning. It says, there's a verse with no purport which says, after instructing all the foolish relatives of Suyagya, Yamaraj in the form of a boy disappeared from their vision, then the relatives of Suyagya performed the ritualistic funeral ceremonies. So this morning's verse that we chanted together, this is by the narrator, spoken by the narrator. Of course, ultimately the narrator is Shukadeva Goswami, but there's stories within stories within stories within stories, just like this one we mentioned the other day. This is Hiranyakashipu speaking a story about a king who died on the battlefield, and his wives came, and so Yamaraj came to pacify them, and then Yamaraj told the story about two Kalinga birds and a hunter, and you know, stories within stories within stories. So this, the morning's verse is not part of the story, it's part of the message that we're supposed to receive from all of this. And I'd like to divide it into three parts. The first is in the first line. Ata shochata ma yuyam. The whole purpose of the stories is to help people become freed from lamentation. Shochata is lament, lamentation. So there are these two things, hankering and lamenting. The shochati, nakangshati. Neither hankering or lamenting. That's pandita, a learned person. Samadarshana. This isn't hankering for material happiness or lamenting for material loss. It's a transcendentalist. And when the scene is Hiranyakashipu is trying to pacify or relieve the aggrieved condition, the lamenting condition of his mother, Diti, and his brother's wife, and all the relatives, because they've lost something. They've lost Hiranyaksha. So he's giving transcendental knowledge of the soul to relieve the misery of loss. Shochati, shochata, lamentation. I mentioned this the other morning, the Kapila Dev describes that knowledge has a certain potency. Bhakti has additional potency that knowledge doesn't have. Knowledge has a potency to bring detachment. Jnana vairagya. Of course, this is transcendental knowledge. It's not the other kind. It's not the avidya kind. Here, this is using ajnana, very similar to the message that Kalakanta was speaking yesterday, just as Ishopanishad says it twice. One should understand knowledge and ignorance side by side. So that's what this verse is doing. And the purport is also doing. And Hiranyakashipu was attempting to do, the scholar, the non-devotee scholar, who is trying to detach family members from grief by knowledge. And there's two parts that's throughout the Bhagavatam. Ignorance, Prabhupada's, look it up sometime. Do a, you know, what is the root cause of suffering? What is the root cause of suffering? It's ignorance. Again and again, he would say, the root cause of suffering is ignorance. So behind suffering is ignorance. So the way to reduce the suffering is reduce ignorance. Give knowledge. And that ignorance has two divisions. It starts with the self-conception, I, aham. And then the corollary, there's a phrase that I've been hearing a lot lately. It's apparently a popular phrase these days in educated circles, is corollary effects. Used to be downstream effects. But anyways, collateral effects is the mind conception, which flows from the I conception. So that's in the verse, so there Prabhupada addresses it in the purport. There's proper knowledge of self and there's improper knowledge of self, an ignorant understanding of self, a darkness of ignorance, ajnana timarandasya, this prayer that we recite, gananjana salakaya chakshuran miditam jena, tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. He's acting as their guru to give them knowledge, to remove this darkness of ignorance, the bodily conception of life. So the bodily conception of life, very simply put, you know, it's Bhagavad Gita 101. We think that we're the body. We think that we're the covering of the soul. We abandon ourselves and take shelter of something that we're not, as the understanding of who we are. And then from that one comes the mine conception. Mine is that which comes from the body. It's mine because it comes from me, so it's mine. And I'm the body. And then following the mine conception, the demoniac nature chapter, divine and demoniac nature, is building our little empire of whatever I can build. Rabindrasrupa Prabhu calls this our God project. We try to be the controller of that which we create, and that which we create is mine. And as was described yesterday morning, similarly here in this purport, Prabhupada is saying, you know, part of the ignorance is that one doesn't know. Although one does know, one just, the miracle is, one doesn't know what you have seen again and again and again and again and again and again. It won't happen to me and it happens to me, or happens to one in ignorance. That is, the whole thing is taken away. That which is mine isn't mine. It's somebody else's. Proof. It's given and it's taken. So it's not mine. That's reality, with a capital R. That's reality. It's not mine. And illusion or ignorance is to think it's mine. and one busies oneself in making a little kingdom for oneself, according to one's capacity. So a little kingdom for a pauper is different than a little kingdom for middle-income person, is a different kingdom for a very wealthy person. And then one considers it very important to maintain that, having built it. Or there's the anxiety that it'll deteriorate, or it'll be stolen from me, or I'll be kicked out by something. And sure enough, ultimately we're kicked out. So in between, we're very busy how Prabhupada begins the purport. Self-preservation. Defending. It's an animal. Instinct. We don't have to send animals to school to teach them to growl and to, show their teeth and to, make noises and use their, whatever their body construction allows them to protect themselves. It's built into the system. And humans do the same thing, however they may do it, in a gross way or a more subtle way, but it's self-preservation. In fact, amongst all of them, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, the most powerful and gripping is defending. I mean, Prabhupada's explanation is, one could be doing any one of the other three main animal propensities, and if danger comes, they abandon the other three and do the one. It's the most powerful, gripping self-preservation. And preserve what? That's what flows. Preserve what? Preserve that which we aren't, and which we're going to be kicked out of anyways. It's an illusion that brings misery. The have-nots, who are hankering for what they don't have, are in misery, and those that have, they're in misery. It doesn't bring the happiness they want. They're in anxiety about losing it, and they lose it. Like Bhagavad Gita verse, Mogasha, Moga Karmano, Moga Jnana Vichetasaha. Rakshasim, it's like heavy. Asurim Chaiva. Those that don't have faith in Krishna's words, and faith specifically that the verses preceding that verse is Krishna's describing the spiritual nature of his body, of his form, of his existence. Those that don't have faith and have understanding, have taken shelter in that reality, they're defeated. Defeated and defeated and defeated. And if the acharyas describe, it means the karmis, they're defeated in their hopes for material improvement. The jnanis are defeated with their hope of achieving liberation. And the devotees, who have mixed devotion, that don't really have faith in the transcendental nature of Krishna's spiritual form, they don't attain salokya. They don't go back to Godhead. Whew. So, we'd like to go back to Godhead. And we'd like to be successful in our spiritual lives. And so, this fundamental understanding is repeated again and again. I want to complete the presentation, I want to refer back, I want to do three things. Refer back to Canto 1, Chapter 7, verses 3 through 5. These three through 6. These verses are the foundation of Bhagavatam, the all 18,000 verses. Because in those verses, It's the realization of Vyas according to the instruction of Narada. It is the basis of the whole of the Bhagavatam. So conversely, the whole of the Bhagavatam is expanding the meaning of those four verses. So those four verses are really important. They're so important that in his Sandarbhas, Jiva Goswami presents them multiple times. And in detail, in, you know, unique, beautiful, elegant detail, Jiva Goswami presents different aspects of those four verses from different angles of vision to illustrate what he wants to illustrate within the Sandarbhas. But right here, very clearly, one of them is being presented. So Canto 7 is illuminating Canto 1, Chapter 7, verses 3 through 6, or at least one of them. And in those verses, one of the verses is, yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute anartam. So the living paropi, although the living entity is para, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, living entity is para, right? Para, para prakriti. There's the eight material elements, that's apara prakriti, and then there's the living entity, that's para prakriti. So paropi, although the living entity is para, the living entity thinks in the state of moha. Moha means bewilderment. And some moha means total bewilderment. They're maya. Yaya sammohita jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. They think themselves as a product of the modes of material nature. I think they're this body. Although they're transcendental. They're the same nature of the Supreme. Same. But they're so bewildered, they think of themselves wrongly. Ajnana. And then what does an ajnana person or a some moha-induced transcendental soul do? Builds a big material civilization. Seeking for happiness through all those arrangements. Seeking for happiness through mind, I and mine. Prabhupada makes reference directly in this purport of this morning to a verse that's in the seventh canto, chapter 9, where the word param appears. We'll go there in just a moment. Here's the sentence again from the purport. As long as human society is in the darkness of ignorance, men will continue to make huge arrangements in the bodily conception of life. So, advancement of civilization, that the phrase is used, and conventionally it's used, advancement of civilization, we're evolving, right? I mean, the evolutionary perspective is we're evolving. And we're evolving. The demonstration of that evolving is look. Just look at all the wonderful things that the evolved living entity is now producing. But from the Vedic perspective, this is ajnana. Now we're living within it. And to a certain extent we're using, look, microphone, you know, live telecast, live stream, you know, we're using the products of technology. That's part of our teaching. Let's go to a very nice verse from Canto 11, Bhagavatam, which says, it's really nice, those who are too much attached to sense gratification, the path that's suitable for them is the path of karma. because they want sense gratification. So they have to learn detachment through offering the results to the Supreme, Karma Yoga. Then there's those that are too much detached, like fanatically detached. The path of knowledge is for them, so they can get this Sayuja Mukti. And for the devotee, for one who is neither too much attached nor too much detached, bhakti is very suitable for that person. Detached enough that when we utilize something like microphones and live stream and whatever else Prabhupada often used, he would point to the microphone and say, we're using technology. Yukta vairagya. So utilizing the not too much attached principle is one can utilize things in Krishna service and not become attached to the things that one utilizes in Krishna service. Because the spirit is Krishna service. So if that something isn't there, we're okay. And if the something is there, we're okay. We can use it in Krishna service. And if we don't have access to it, we're very detached. It's okay. We can receive something or lose something. And we're okay. Remember what I spoke on Sunday evening about Sridhar Maharaj having his car broken into and have his Nrisimha deity stolen. And he was so calm. And I was not concerned about his stuff. I was concerned about the deity. And even with that, he was so calm. He said, Lord Srinagadeva is very merciful. I said, yeah, he's merciful, but, you know, he's also got another side to him. And he said, he just repeated, he's very merciful. Somehow this person is going to spiritually benefit. And I'm happy to be the instrument of this person somehow spiritually benefiting. Okay, stealing the property of a Brahmin, Lord Nrisimhadev deity. He's very kind, okay. That's because you're very kind. So, go back to the first line. Atta, so this is a summary verse. Atta means therefore. The purpose of transcendental knowledge is to release people from the grief of attachment by spiritual knowledge. You're not this body. And then not this body, the loss is not the soul, the loss is the extensions of the body, my relatives. In the case of his wife, my husband, or the case of the mother, my son. In the case of others, my father or my uncle or whoever. Grief. Bereavement. Being aggrieved is the translation in the verse. So now, he's not teaching bhakti. Just wait till next chapter. He's not teaching bhakti. He's just giving knowledge. And again, knowledge is suitable for persons who are overly detached or overly attached. And so to put something on the other side. And we're going to hear, as we go further, we're going to hear the distinction not only between agyana and jnana, between abhakta and bhakta. So for devotees, we receive this nice instruction as a subset of bhakti, that which will help us to navigate our way through this civilization that pumps itself up as being advanced through technology and science, and we're supposed to go, yay, technology and science, at least, you know, people in society, and the products of technology and science. And from Prabhupada, our founder Acharya's perspective, that is the greatest obstacle for furthering the message of Krishna consciousness, that is blind faith in science and technology, that it's going to make us eternal, or it's going to make the quality of life better, and we need to really get into it and support it and value it and sustain it and participate in it with, like, our faith, with, like, our religion. And then so there's something over here that says, well, wait a minute, there's the soul. Just anecdotal that will say the whole thing that I want to say here. Two semesters ago, one Chinese student at Washington University started attending our programs at the Bhakti Yoga Society in Washington University. And he was really attracted. And, you know, I'd spent some time with him. Actually, he came here to the Festival of the Holy Name two times ago. Maybe you remember. And then we had a little session upstairs during the Festival of Holy Name just for the college students. And he said, you know, I'm a finance major. And I keep hearing all these things about detachment. And, you know, this is just the opposite of the economic paradigm of consumer economics. I said, you've understood. Said, you know, if the implication was, you know, if the government really understood, you know, what to speak of, the Chinese government understood this is the message of bhakti, you know, is detrimental to economic development. I said, no. Because ours is spiritual economics. Huh? What's spiritual economics? Because there's consumer economics. What's spiritual economics? I said, there's a couple of books written about it, but the principle is we utilize things in Krishna service. We buy those things. We're consumers of those things that are useful for Krishna service. But the consciousness behind the consumption is different, and the things that we may have an interest to consume is different. I mean, we're consuming some technology here, but we're just utilizing it in Krishna service. That's spiritual economics. You don't say, you know, don't earn and don't spend, but, you know, whatever you earn, it's the way that you earn is for Krishna and the way you spend is for Krishna. Spiritual economic. And there's so much more to it. So in the purport, if one is an immature devotee, they may think, oh, I should be callous to other people. I should not have any feelings for other people because that's maya. That's, you know, attachment to the bodily conception of life, family, friends, society, and love. We heard that Prabhupada using those phrases again and again. That's, you know, an immature. The immature is too much attached to detachment without understanding, you know, the proper utilization of things. Kalakanta expressed it very beautifully yesterday. You know, we're not the body, but we also have our duties in terms of the body. So we do that, but not that's all in all. There's this mission of life, which is to using the thorn to remove the thorn, another phrase that Prabhupada uses. And that's what bhakti is. We utilize things of this plane, although it's not us. We utilize things that, so it's the bhakti principle, not for sense gratification, but for the satisfaction of the senses of Krishna, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. And therein lies our detachment through love. So it's not we're against love. We're not against, you know, relationships. We're not against family. We're against the bodily conception of doing those things in ignorance. You do those things in knowledge, but knowledge alone is not enough. That's, you know, like a message that I spoke in the previous class, because one who is in knowledge and then involves themselves with matter, something happens. They start to become influenced by the illusory potency. Knowledge seems to get covered by clouds, and darkness starts to enter, and one becomes attached, even one is attempting to become situated in knowledge. And therefore, those that are on the path of knowledge, it's recommended, in some cases it's more than recommended, it's mandatory, that you take sannyas. You can't have any worldly possessions. You can't have any relations. You have to be sterile. You know, in a straitjacket in a padded cell. And then you can become self-realized. You know, blindfolded and gagged. And then you can be self-realized. So we're not like that. Here's another example. Prabhupada gestured. I remember watching him from the Vyasa-san saying, if there's a Mayavadi and someone offers the Mayavadi some gold, without even attempting to do so, their hand goes behind their back. No. And the devotee goes like this, but not out of greed, that this is something that can be utilized in Krishna's service. Not out of greed, not out of control and enjoyment, but it's the potency of bhakti. The potency of bhakti dissolves the material conceptions. Knowledge and detachment follow. They're like attendants to the queen. The queen is bhakti. And knowledge and detachment are her attendants. And they follow behind the queen wherever she goes. So our focus goes to bhakti. We're cultivating bhakti. Now, supposing we're not perfected souls yet. Maybe some of you are already there, but most of us are not yet perfected souls. So what is enjoined for us? We hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and like this verse, it's spoken by Hiranyakashipu, it's not bhakti yet, but because of the transcendental purports, we're getting that sense of it's to help us in our life of devotion. And part of that help in the life of devotion is detachment through knowledge. You know, the foolishness of fruitive activities. Fruitive activities is a nice way of combining the two things, I and mine. Put those two together and you get fruitive activities. I'm this body and I want to enjoy. So I do fruitive activities, so I get some things that I can enjoy. Here's Prahlad Maharaj, the verse that Prabhupada makes reference to in the purport. This is Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadeva. It's where this word bharam appears. And the first part of it is, he says, I'm not afraid. The demigods, they've come before you and they have fear of you. But I have no fear of you. I'm not afraid of material existence either. Why? Because I simply remember you and I'm separated from material existence. Whenever I stay, wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. So what is his concern? His anxiety. He doesn't have anxiety for himself. He's Vaikunthavasi. But he has concern. Shocha, same as in this verse, right? Second word. Here's his shocha, here's his lamentation. Tato vimukta chetasa indriyartha, vimukta chetasa. Chetasa means consciousness. In this case, it means Krishna consciousness. Vimukta chetasa, those who are bereft of Krishna consciousness. Indriyartha, what's their artha? What is that which they value? Sense gratification. That's what they value. Those who are bereft of Krishna consciousness covet sense gratification. Maya sukhaya. Anyone who has heard Prabhupada's lectures knows that phrase. He would just say that phrase, a Maya Sukhaya civilization. Just refers to this verse, Maya Sukha, false happiness. And Param Udvahato Vimudhan Param. It means a false burden or responsibility. Prabhupada has not exactly used that in the purport for this morning's verse. He's speaking more of the responsibility to what? Responsibility to a grand arrangement for roads and hospitals and automobiles and big houses and palaces and bank balance. And as we heard, whoever has, it's not sufficient. It's just the nature of passion. Dushparena, analenacha, never enough. Whatever one has, it's never enough. Whatever one has, it's never enough. They're in anxiety. And someone may come and take it. They're in anxiety. And it's eventually going to be gone, and they're in anxiety. It's the nature. So, bharam, specifically in the verse spoken by Prahlad to Lord Nrisimhadev, it's a burden. It's an ass-like, using the language of Srila Prabhupada, it's an ass-like mentality. I have to carry this burden. I have to maintain the status quo. I'll be embarrassed if I don't meet the expectations of people who wish that I should be rich and successful and, you know, on top of the pile and, you know, climb the mountain and all of those images of what it, you know, being successful. And then once you have it, you have to maintain it. Prabhupada told the story that a businessman who was involved in something, in a court case, he lost all his wealth, and in 1 year he died because he couldn't even imagine living without his wealth. He had no will to live anymore. He died. Because life is bharam, life of responsibility. And it sounds, you know, nice. Sounds like, hey, that's a good quality to have, be responsible. To maintain what? Udvahato vimudhan. Udvahato. Maintain this big establishment and make it better and more gorgeous and smoother and less bumps and, you know, better, and just keep building it and building it and building it and building it. Vimudhan. The lamentation of Prahlad, and this is chapter 9 of the 7th canto, is for those poor living entities that are suffering under this ignorance, thinking this is responsible life. Bottom. Maintaining this big, gorgeous arrangement. And that's what this morning's purport is about. What is that big, gorgeous arrangement? And if you take the jnana as opposed to the ajnana perspective, it's a major distraction from the mission of life. What's the mission of life? Self-realization. So now just read a little bit this long Sanskrit phrase from Brahma Vaivarta Purana that Madhvacharya is referring to, for which there's no translation. I tried to look it up before class, and I It's not in any of the references that I have, you know, the word-for-word translation of these things. But here's the purport. As long as we are in this human form of body, our duty is to understand the soul within the body. Body is not the self. We are different from the body, and therefore there is no question of friends, enemies, or responsibilities. There's this param. In terms of the bodily conception of life. So when changes come, don't get in anxiety. Don't invest unlimitedly in the temporary. We may utilize something in Krishna's service. That's fine. So this is our life. It's a life of simplicity. This is it's a brahminical lifestyle. We're being trained, taken out of that soup into the position of brahminical lifestyle. At least specifically, temple life is meant like that. So we can become very clean and simple, and we don't need elaborate arrangements, and it's not that we don't, we're being trained at least, that that's not where real happiness is. It's not where real happiness is. Happiness is certainly in relationships, and loving relationships, specifically in relation to Krishna. Or, so that's where our attention goes. And the best of our relationships are those that help us come to the spiritual conception of life, to understand we're not this body. It should not be done abruptly or, you know, beyond someone's capacity to bring them to that conception of life. But the whole style of life that we live and how we interact with others is to be agents to assist others to come to that position. Gently, affectionately, warmly, relationally to that position. That's what real friendship is. That's your best friend. One who will assist you in that way. Your best friend. Best friend. And Srimad Bhagavatam is such a wonderful resource. Similarly, in that the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is taking us there, taking us to Krishna. It is the literary form of Krishna. Even it's being spoken by Hiranyakashipu. It's so nice, taking us to Krishna with the wonderful assist of our acharyas who are giving their commentary, and especially our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, who's making it so palatable and accessible, simple. I find it's, and I just end with this, I find it's really wonderful how many times here again, you know, the second canto, chapter 2, you know, the same message of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, again and again and again and again and again and again, and it's going to come again, it's going to come again, it's going to come again. About, we're not this body, and don't engage, the whole program of happiness through fruitive activities is totally futile. It brings misery, not happiness. And turn attention instead to the path of transcendence. So utilize things, but with detachment in that spirit, for service to Krishna, cultivate the service to Krishna spirit. And life changes. The Bhagavatam is taking us there. Life transforming experience. Okay, so any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a wonderful class. So you were mentioning that ignorance begins with I and mine, basically. So this brings to mind, in chapter 13, where it's mentioned items of knowledge, the beginning is humility, Prabhupada mentions. So there was one article I was coming across about Bhaktisiddhanta. I don't read his articles. I just kind of browse through them because I usually don't understand the words. But one thing he said in one article called Sri Guru Tabla and Sela, he says that real humility is not merely an external show of humility, which is mere duplicity. And Prabhupada kind of mentions a thing in the introduction to Gita where he says, we work not with our body, but with our mind and intelligence. So this brings to mind that sometimes, you know, it's Kali Yuga. We're going to get into our, you know, frictions with devotees and stuff, but they're definitely not as high as, you know, in the material world. So we're actually probably more grateful for the frictions in here than outside. So because they're learning experience, they create good character like tolerance and humility and stuff. So you were mentioning that midst devotion, one cannot go back to Godhead. So and to connect these two points is that how do we increase? In other words, my question is, sometimes we think we're not on the spotlight if we don't take a position.
Sometimes we think we're not
on the spotlight if we don't
on the spotlight.
Yeah, in the spotlight if we don't take a position of like sannyas or if we're not invited on the vyasa sign. So but that doesn't mean necessarily that you're humble. Like usually offenses begin in the mind. So that's kind of how I connect the two points. So how can we increase our, I don't know, respect and gratitude? And because we, you know, I'll speak from my personal experience, growing experience, we all have this experience that, you know, when we get into a friction, we think, you know, externally, we're like, yes, I forgive you. But then we're thinking, yes, you're going to pay for that. So how can we pay more attention to this mentality? Because we may not really kind of notice it. we're kind of content with, you know, satisfied with this mentality. We don't notice our mind actually talking to us. Not us speaking, so.
Okay.
How can we improve that mentality?
Okay. Sincerity. And with sincerity, taking up the basics of Krishna consciousness. Just during this past weekend, this is anecdotal, but I was walking up to my room and I saw two young girls sweeping the stairs. And it was nice. They were into it. So I said, you know what Prabhupada says about cleaning Krishna's temple? And they didn't know what they wanted to hear. Prabhupada said, when you clean Krishna's temple, you're cleansing your heart. So then I said it again. When you clean Krishna's temple, and then they said it, a duet, you're cleaning your heart. So when you're cleaning Krishna's temple, you're cleaning your heart whether you're sincere or not. But when you're sincere, then you hear the instruction that you're cleansing your heart, and you get more clean. Cleansing takes place more effectively. But supposing somebody's not interested in cleansing their heart, you know, there's so many things that are impure, they don't even notice because they're not interested in becoming pure. So they don't even notice. But when, now the sincerity part, it's the same as the message of nectar devotion. One who is eligible for devotional service is one who wants devotional service, sincerely. So the very fact that you're asking the question is the main criterion for going beyond that shortcoming, connecting with the process of bhakti. It's not the mechanical execution of bhakti, it's the sincere, that's the, you know, the nature of bhakti. I want to serve Krishna without something else. Just serving Krishna. Just serving Krishna. That's what Prahlad says to Lord Nrisimhadev. There's nothing between us other than service. You've asked me to take a benediction, but I'm not a business person. I'm not serving so I'll get something. So please don't ask me to take something because there isn't anything else between us, but you're the master, I'm the servant, and there's nothing else. So to get to that there's nothing else position, one has to sincerely desire the nothing else position and take up the right means. So back to the two girls sweeping the stairs. Or, you know, any one of us. Partly what resonated when I was, as I was speaking to them, was that was a very important realization for me in the first month of living in a Hare Krishna temple, was taking the instruction to heart. When you're cleaning Krishna's pots, you're cleaning your heart. And I was going, rah, rah, rah. You know, if it's like that, then how come you're not here washing the pots, man? I didn't say it, but that was my mentality. Instead of taking instruction to heart. So sincerity is where you really want your relationship with Krishna, regardless of anything else. And so the contamination can be removed if I really want the contamination. And all the other things that I don't recognize that are also contaminations to be removed. Without sincerity, the mechanical process can go on a long time without being fully effective. But when you're sincere, then you realize, whoops, there's not only that dirt, but there's so many other, and oh my goodness, and so many other, and you know, then it might get intimidated or embarrassed or something. Discouraged. But it's a good sign. Just sincere application of the process of bhakti according to the teachings, instructions that we receive. Results will come. Purification will come. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I had an encounter on the campus at University of Chicago about a month and a half ago. A student at their business school came up to me.
Student of the business school?
Yeah. Okay. MBA candidate in finance. And offered me a pen and said, as part of my entrepreneurship class, we have this study or experiment we're doing where I have to convince you to take this pen in return for anything you want to give me.
I couldn't follow what you said. You saying to him or he's saying
he's
to you?
He's saying to me.
He's saying to you,
yeah.
It's my assignment to convince you.
To take this pen.
To take this pen?
This pen. He was holding out a pen, like a regular ballpoint pen.
Okay,
you know,
fine.
Nothing special. And you give me whatever you like, anything you want. So I said, okay, well, go ahead, convince me. And then he tried to convince me about the pen.
Speak slower.
And he was not a very good salesman, but to humor him, I took the pen and I gave him a Perfection of Yoga.
Ha.
So he looked at the book and he said, oh, what is this? And so I started explaining to him bhakti, and I had a realization in this moment that the principle of bhakti will have to be sort of, depending on who you're speaking to, you will highlight a certain aspect of the results of performing devotional service. So if you meet somebody who's, suppose you meet someone on campus who's quite detached from the material empire, you know, and he's like really looking for a spiritual experience, then you might highlight something else.
Speak slower.
Yes, Maharaj, I'll slow down.
I got it. But just help me.
Yes, Maharaj, sorry. Then you meet somebody who is coming from a background like this young man, then you would highlight something else. And I'm giving you this context because I really want to understand. And this was also my question during the weekend seminar. And you touched upon this lightly when you spoke about the Chinese student.
Yeah.
And his concern that you're speaking about detachment.
It wasn't a concern, it was an observation.
It was an observation.
He wasn't like panicked.
Yeah.
He just was noticing, hey,
yeah.
I think this is different.
Right. And so what I told this business student, and it was enough to convince him to then further on buy a Bhagavad Gita from me, was that, you know, you're going to be a big shot someday, but with all the money and with all the power, you might forget why you entered business school in the first place. You probably want to do something good for the world. You lose your values. And he agreed with me. And I said, but if you read this book, then it might help you stay true to your values. And then you might become a big shot, but because you have some foundation, you know, here you go. So he's like, oh, I want this book. And gave me a donation. But then when he'll read the book, it'll say, you have to serve Krishna. And
that's okay.
And that's totally okay.
That's how he'll keep his values.
Right, that's how you keep your values. But it's striking me that we sell, and I use that word sell sort of playfully, we sell bhakti to others based on its results. The results of performing bhakti are, you'll have values, you'll be happy, but the process of getting there, you have to go through this, like this verse is pointing out, I'm not the body, everything is temporary, the material world is a place of misery, I have to learn to serve Krishna. And I'm wondering how to, sometimes I feel like, am I tricking them? You know?
No. No. Let me,
do you understand my dilemma, Maharaj?
I get the picture. Just waiting for you to put the microphone down. Speaking what Prabhupada said about how distributors of books should speak to the public. In short, he would do things in a, sometimes say things in a sutra-like way. So there's no exaggeration. Now, in the 3-minute exchange or 5-minute exchange with this student or other students, you can't give them the whole picture in your mind so that you're not acting out of integrity. You can be thinking of the big picture, and something that's not the big picture is part of the big picture, because what you said is true. And when he does read the thing, he'll say, oh my God, this is talking about serving Krishna, and I thought it was about, you know, not becoming filled with pride, and when I become a big shot, I'll hold on to my values. But, you know, that's part of the bigger picture, because he isn't going to be able to hang on to his veil, as you said in the exchange, unless there's some, you know, there's some shelter. The material nature is going to rule unless there's some shelter. It's not misleading. It's, you're not saying the entirety of Bhagavad Gita's message in that short exchange. But, you know, back to what Prabhupada said, it's not, whatever you say, it practically speaking, it's not exaggeration, you know, what Krishna is and what Krishna can do, and the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and so forth. Now, your ethics are what they are, and it's good that they are what they are. You want to be speaking and acting in integrity and not just flim flam, take the book by hook or crook and walk away, and then the person feels cheated. But if you meet that person later on and they point to, look what this is saying in this book. You told me this and here's, the book says that. You should be in integrity and be able to, you know, say, what I said is true and here's how it's true. You come to our Bhagavad Gita classes and you'll learn more. Your eyes will open to true knowledge, and true knowledge is knowledge of devotion. True knowledge is knowledge of devotion. For that spiritual position to be secured, there must be shelter. Otherwise, your ethics are going to get washed away. Exactly what I said. It's going to happen. And you don't want it to happen. And I know that you don't want it to happen because you're just that little exchange that we had. So it's true. It's not misleading. It's true. So, and then back to the, you know, the, you know, the, then the next person, then the next person. It's not just salesmanship, say anything, get them to take the book, and later they feel cheated. That's not our program. But our program is not give them the entirety of the Bhagavad Gita's message before they buy the book, because they might find something in the book that later on they feel, well, that isn't what you didn't give me this whole picture. Now there's this. You know, like chant and be happy. And then somebody chants and, you know, I didn't get rich. And happiness is getting rich. So you lied to me. You didn't lie to them. What is real happiness? So speak from the place of integrity. Understand that your audience has their different needs, interests, and concerns. Address those needs, interests, and concerns. And you don't have to give the whole Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam message in 3 minutes. It's not possible. But you connect them to Krishna with faith that by connecting with Krishna and his message of Bhagavad Gita, that purpose which you just said to that person is going to be fulfilled. It's not sneaky or tricky or misleading or deception. Your message can be succinct. And if you want them to unpack the sutra for you, you can. Please come to our classes. Sure, why not?
Very beautiful answer. It really solved most of my doubt. Just a short follow-up to kill the doubt completely.
Speak slowly.
Do you remember Radhanath Swami mentioning in his presentation how he was speaking at a think tank and an individual was firing questions at him and he was giving responses from Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
But in a way that made it very relevant for who they are.
Yeah.
And then he was getting invitations to different countries to speak. And something that Acharya Nishtaprabhu and myself speak about frequently is when we present Bhagavad Gita in college environments, you know, we have to make it relevant for them. We have to make it relevant for them.
Yeah, sure.
So when you're speaking to an audience of, you could say, movers and shakers in the world, people who are going places, they're doing big things, you know. And like you said very nicely, we don't give the whole message of Gita in 3 minutes. But if you have the opportunity where you're actually spending more time with them and they're meeting you on a repeated basis, are we to tell them that you can be who you are in the material world, you know, you can pursue your large material goals with the foundational knowledge that it's ultimately not going to satisfy you and not going to make you happy?
That realization may come, sure. I mean, you have to be so explicit, but here's the message of Lord Brahma, stane stituk. Shrutikatam tanavan manobir. That's our Bhagavatam message. Stay in your position. I've got these, you know, desires to do da-da-da-da. Stay in your position. Follow your desires to do da-da-da-da. But hear the message of Bhagavatam. And in course of time, Krishna is so kind, those desires will gradually fade and other desires will take their place. And then that is, instead of being ambitious to get some honor, distinction, and fame, you will wish to see that Krishna's purposes will be fulfilled. And you can stay in that position. Just the motivation becomes different, or the consciousness behind the activity becomes different. But all that will take place in due course naturally, depending upon sincerity. The cleansing effectiveness has a bhakti element, one sincerity. Well, supposing I don't want cleanliness. Supposing I simply want success. Well, serve Krishna too. Akama sarva kama. So be clear. Don't be, you know, doubtful about who you are and the integrity with the message and the mission. Don't be a deceiver, but be relevant and relatable, and you don't have to hide behind things to be relevant and relatable. He's in his dhoti when he's sitting with these people, the think tank people. They want spirituality. They want, you know, economic development. So how are they going to get economic development with spirituality? And that's, you know, that was the challenge that Krishna gave him the opportunity to address. He didn't hide who he is and the message of Bhagavad Gita, but made it relevant and relatable. And it wasn't, you know, throw away your economic development plan, my dear sir. It was take the message of Bhagavad Gita to heart. And in course of time, the motivation behind the activity will change, and maybe the activity will change, but for sure the consciousness behind the activity will change. I mean, here's two examples. Ambarish. Prabhupada didn't tell him, you know, stop being involved in Ford Motor Company. George Harrison wanted to take initiation. I wasn't there. I was told. George Harrison requested Prabhupada to give him initiation, and Prabhupada said, better you just stay in your position. You can influence more people that from that place. He could have given him initiation from that position. He didn't. I don't know the details, but it's illustrating a principle. So the goal is not to get people out of their position. It's, you know, the consciousness behind, the purpose for it. Kings are needed, and ministers of government are needed. Let them be in Krishna consciousness. That's Bhagavatam's message. That's Prabhupada's purports. So cleanse the purpose behind the activity. That's Bhagavad Gita's message. Perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. So how to bring that? Always think of Krishna into their life. It's through bhakti. And when bhakti is there, bhakti does cleansing. And, you know, the dirty things become cleansed. And some of the activities may change because some of them are dirty. So you don't do the dirty. You do only the clean. And from that position.
Hare Krishna. I had the good fortune of driving Tukaram Prabhu to the airport.
Driving?
Tukaram.
Tukaram Prabhu.
From the airport and also to the airport. So we had the overall very nice exchange, and he shared with me one thing which I thought was kind of him to say. He suggested I dumb myself down. Did you hear that?
Upstairs? Just you're speaking, or did I hear him say that upstairs?
No. Well, we were in the car together, Maharaj. Sorry.
Okay.
During the conversation, which I thought it was kind of him to say, because, like you're saying, the value of the basics of Krishna consciousness. The basics. Basics.
Basics.
Yeah. Reconnecting with the basics.
Okay.
So, my question was, in applying this idea of approaching everything as being engageable in Krishna's service, how do I know what to accept and what to reject?
Well, that's a similar. I'm looking at the clock. I have a call at 9. I'm going to have to run. It's 8:56, almost 57. So I'm going to have to give a short answer. Similar to what Radhanath Maharaj spoke when he answered the question, you know, on the one hand, but then on the other hand, about, you know, engaging people that are counterculture people, or, you know, like, you know, not good association people, and should I or shouldn't I? Remember that question. And his answer was, you have to have a proper foundation. So it's not engage everything. The words that you used, if I heard correctly, was engage everything. Well, we can't. Everything is not meant to be engaged. There's some things that are sinful. We don't engage those things. But we may approach somebody who's engaged in those things and engage those persons in service to Krishna, like Jagai Madhai, if you're, you know, Lord Nityananda. And if you're not Lord Nityananda, you may become contaminated by that circumstance. So there are some things we may not engage. And so where there's proper strength and purity, and even when there's strength and purity, there's risk. So one has to be cautious in the mood of service as opposed to in the mood of something else, whatever that something, so many something else's. And then quickly, you know, or consciously come back to the shelter of devotee association and our core devotional practices that keep us in that protected, cleansed position. So, like, you know, what Maharaj is doing, these examples that he made reference to, it's a high-risk thing. We're very fortunate that we have such a qualified person in our midst that can go into those high-risk circumstances and maintain purity. And some of the rest of us may not be able to do that. We might, maybe, I remember one of Prabhupada's disciples was, had a relationship with a king, without the details. And so he was trying to cultivate, you know, the king. And, you know, some relationship developed with the princess, the daughter of the king. And he left Krishna consciousness. Yeah. And then I remember, you know, another the devotee, this is, you know, 1970. Devotee in the Boston Temple wanted to go off and start a college program at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And there was, and he went alone. And he was cautioned, not a good idea. But no, and you know, he lost his Krishna consciousness through that association. The intention, but the foundation, using the language that Maharaj was using. So everything, many things that can be engaged in devotional service, we may not have the capacity to engage some of those many things. So be cautious, better to err on the side of caution than otherwise. But we take risks living in the material world. Not going out is a risk. Going out is a risk. So we take risks, but we take thoughtful risks, and it's 8:59, and I'm going to go take my call. Srila Prabhupada, Kate.